Welcome back to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused children with truth and love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their identity. But in no other area of medicine, education, or psychology is one treatment plan assigned to every person. At Partners for Ethical Care, we believe that each child is an individual and should be given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And what's our topic for today, Maria?
Well, today we're going to talk about parenting siblings of transgender identified kids. And this is a topic that doesn't get much, if any, coverage. When I was doing some research trying to get ready for our talk today, and one of the things I do is I look at the literature that's out there, I look at what other people are saying, I look for some experts to speak into what we're going to talk about. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything. And the only things that I could find about siblings of transgender identified kids were all about getting the sibling to support the trans identified kid, how to teach the sibling transgender ideology, how to get the siblings on board with the so-called affirmative care support. And that's not at all what I want to talk about today. What I'd like to talk about is very specific, unique needs of kids whose brother or sister has adopted a transgender identity, because this affects the whole family. This isn't just between the trans identified child and the parents. There are specific things that are going on kind of laterally between the kids that parents need to be aware of and remember. You're not just parenting the child who's in crisis, you're parenting the siblings as well.
And in a lot of ways, this reminds me of parenting a special need child within a family, and how that special need child can really be the focus of the family and attention of the parents, really leaving the other siblings out, not intentionally, but just because the child, you know, the one special needs child requires so much care and attention. However, it's a little bit different because often in this case, the siblings are being manipulated by the, you know, by the trans-identified child in a way that can be really concerning and that parents need to know about. I actually interviewed a mother who had a child who was trans-identifying, and she found out that her trans-identifying child was threatening suicide if the younger siblings didn't call him by the pronoun and name he wanted them to call him by. And so this is an incredibly manipulative thing for an older child to do to younger siblings. And I actually grew up in a home where this happened. My brother was often threatening suicide if I didn't do things for him. And his issues were a little bit different. He had addictive behavior. But if I didn't cover for him, he'd be, you know, I'm going to kill myself if you don't cover for me, or I'm going to kill myself if you don't do this. And that is, I can tell you, like, the threat of that as a younger sibling was so overwhelming at times. And of course, I did what he wanted me to do without question, because, the last thing I wanted to do was to have his blood on my hands. And I thought, you know, as a kid, you feel like, of course, I'm going to accommodate this. Parents need to know how powerful these kinds of threats are. And even if the child doesn't overtly tell the siblings, I'm going to kill myself if you don't do what I want you to do, that might be a message that they're kind of hearing from the trans community, from activists, from teachers, from neighbors, might be giving them this message that if you don't do what this child says you're supposed to do, there's this threat of suicide, which is just so overwhelming.
It's emotionally manipulative, but you're right. That's what everyone's being told. If you misgender, you know, use the not preferred pronouns for a transgender identified person, that's going to make that person suicidal. Mm-hmm. And the kids are hearing this. And in tandem with what you said about the family that you interviewed, I know of one family that the mom had the kids at the pool and found out later the transgender identified child told her sister, I'm going to dunk you and hold you under the water unless you use my preferred name with these other kids that they had just met at the pool that day.
And so there's this bullying component that comes in because, you know, that suicide threat is a way of bullying and that kind of, you know, very aggressive behavior saying, you know, I'm going to basically bully you into compliance, which is really scary for kids.
Yeah. So any child can be bullied. Any sibling relationship can have a bullying element to it. And a lot of times I think parents aren't aware that it's going on. You're not seeing really what's going on in the bedroom mm-hmm. with your girls or your boys, you know, who are sharing a room. I remember when I had, I have three kids, and when they were very small, I remember somebody telling me, those kids have lives together that you know nothing about. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm the mom. I know everything. I see all. That's what I tell my kids. Like, I have eyes everywhere. I see everything. But I don't know what's going on and what's happening. And we need to just be aware of that.
Yeah.
And we can, again, we talked in an earlier video about making space. You can't force good conversations or deep conversations to happen. You can't force your child to tell you things, but it's really important to make space where those opportunities can come up. Mm-hmm. So having a time where you just take one of your kids out to dinner, out to breakfast. I try to have dates with my kids occasionally where I just go out with one, go without an agenda, mm-hmm. Or with an unspoken agenda. Mm-hmm. And while you're out having dinner, having breakfast, just like, how are things going? What's going on? Tell me about your life.
Yeah.
Is anything bothering you? Is anything troubling you? Tell me something great that happened this week. Tell me something not so great that happened this week. Mm-hmm. And with young children, I think this is especially important. If the trans-identified child is older, I want to say it's almost guaranteed there's some bullying going on with the younger children.
Well, it's part of the ideology that it's okay to bully people in order to get your way. These kids, these trans-identified kids are actually encouraged to adopt bullying behavior with others. And so it would, as you said, it would be highly unlikely that they're not using it on their siblings because they're being trained to be bullies. And that's so unfortunate. But as you said, it's great if, you know, we've talked in previous episodes that it's important for parents to make time for the trans-identified child to have opportunities to connect. Well, it's just as important to do that with the siblings. Those kids need your attention. They're seeing their other sibling kind of create a ruckus in the house and potentially being bullying. They need some support from you. And it's really tough because I think sometimes even when there is really obvious bullying going on, sometimes the parents don't know what to do. When I got a little bit older, my brother and I fought. It was this weird relationship where he had so much anger towards me and he would beat me when my parents weren't around. And at one point my mom was actually talking about sending me to live with another relative because she knew she couldn't protect me. I was, early teens and she had to go to work. She had to be out of the house sometimes. There wasn't a way to always protect me. And what I ended up doing is just getting involved in lots of extracurricular activities at school. So I'd go to school at like 6 a.m, hang out in the yard for a while. And then I would be involved in lots and lots of extracurricular activities. So I was busy all the time. On weekends, I would go to the library to study. So that's how I was able to accommodate it as an older, as an older child. But if this bullying had started taking place when I was younger, I'm not entirely sure what my mom would have done. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I want to caveat by saying I am not a family therapist. I'm not a therapist of any kind. And I don't have a lot of expertise in family dynamics. I learned a lot as I was researching for this episode. If your kids are in a dangerous situation, don't ignore it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that just don't ignore it. And there are good family therapists out there. And that actually might be a helpful sort of circuitous roundabout way of dealing with the trans issue in your home. So many therapists are, completely sold out with the trans narrative that it can be kind of dangerous to go to one of them. But if you've got a situation where, you know what, my kid's siblings are having some struggles, we need some family therapy to deal with those dynamics, that might be a good way to get some therapy that's not focused on the transgender stuff.
Yeah, and I think that it's really important to do that because I know in my brother's case, he feels terribly guilty about how he treated me. You know, there were, throughout my young adult life, there were times where my brother would call and he was completely drunk and he was bawling and saying, I'm so sorry. And this is, you know, something he now has, this is something he has to process and live with. And so it sort of has compounded any issues he already had. And so if you do have these dynamics going on, a lot of times it really isn't the bullying kid's fault. There's some underlying thing that's causing that. You know, in my brother's case, it turns out a lot of these feelings came because he was unable to protect me from being sexually assaulted. And so he took that on and, you know, kids have such weird feelings. Sometimes he loved me terribly, but other times he just had this rage. And I suspect that that could be very similar to how a transgender identified child feels, where they, you know, sometimes they feel really connected. They love their siblings. And other times they might just have this rage if the sibling isn't acting in a way that is affirming them as they've been told their siblings are supposed to do. They're being told that their siblings don't love them if they don't do these things, which is so incredibly damaging to a relationship. And so I think getting help is just incredibly important, you know, nipping it in the bud if you can. And even, you know, I'm not sure my parents' idea was that off base. You know, it may be that, you know, if you can find a secure place for your child to go, maybe for the summer, well, if you're, you know, if they're really fighting, if this is really escalating, you know, to find a safe place for them while you work through these issues, which is, it's pretty extreme. But I think in the long run, it's better to do that than to have just intense conflict in the home.
Well, and even within your home, if you can provide sort of spaces for retreat, a space that a child can go either when he or she is feeling rage, because you have to release your rage somewhere. I'm thinking about your brother. He had all these conflicted feelings. He had no safe place to get them out. Mm-hmm. And so you were the only punching bag he had, unfortunately. But like, if I'm getting upset and angry, whatever, I'm going to go off by myself so that I can decompress, calm down. But if kids don't have a place in the home where they can be assured that they can go there and be alone, if they're sharing a bedroom, if it's a small home that there's not spaces for everybody to, you know, have their own space, try to find somewhere in the home that somebody can sort of have that as their retreat. Mm-hmm. And one of my kids asked several years ago, is there just some place in our house that I can have that's just mine, that isn't a bedroom that has to be shared? And, you know, I mean, I'm racking my brain. I'm like, the only place I could think of, this is so Harry Potter, but we have this little storage area under the stairs.
It's awesome. You were ahead of your time.
It's probably 4 feet deep. And then the stairs are in it. So, you know, at the end, it comes down to a little cubby door that goes into like more storage, but it's like 2 feet wide and 4 feet deep. And I'm like, there's that. And my child was so excited. Like, can I have that? Can I put a beanbag chair in there? Put a little table with like some drawing supplies and stuff. That's the retreat. That's where that child wants to go. And I'm like, please don't tell anybody that we make you go in the space under the stairs. But that just fixed the problem. That child goes in there when decompression is necessary.
Wow. That's amazing. And there are lots of things that parents can do to help diffuse anger, you know, depending on the child's age. But, and sometimes you can even do things like that together as a family, depending again on the age of the kids. But, you know, you can you know, make bread together and be like, okay, let's pound this bread, you know? And, you know, there are things that activities that you can do to bring kids together, that can allow them to sort of vent, but not vent at each other, which I think is really important. And again, these can be, you know, this is one of those topics that can get kind of above our expertise really quickly here, because the bullying can be so intense, you know. As I said, I've talked to parents and my heart just goes out to them, because, you know, not only are they dealing with this, you know, kid who has a trans identity, but their whole family sort of is just being devastated by it. And again, that's where, as a parent, it's just important to have that awareness. And like you said, sometimes, you know, my mom didn't really understand the extent to which, things had escalated in my home until she came home one day and my brother was chasing me with a butcher knife. And she was like, whoa, you weren't kidding. Wow. I mean, it was really scary. You know, one of these, and it was then that she finally was like, because I think before she was like, oh, kids fight, you know, yeah. Siblings fight, kids squabble, you know, and that is, I think, a pretty common reaction about parents. Of course you fight, you know, of course you squabble. But like you said, we don't always know what's going on. And I discovered that when my kids got older, I didn't realize that apparently my son had been going to my daughter's bedroom crying oftentimes at night because he was having trouble at school. And he wasn't able to talk about it during the day. I had no idea how intense this was, but it was like at night when he would try to go to sleep, it would come back to him. And my daughter's bedroom was right across the hallway from him. And so he would go to her, and yeah. She was just wonderfully good at calming him and encouraging him. But I feel bad. I had no idea that was going on for years. So, well,
just like my friend said, your kids yeah. have lives together that you are not a part of.
Yeah.
I have felt really hobbled as a parent of multiple kids because I did not grow up with near age siblings. Mm-hmm. I have one brother. He's 12 years older than I am. So he moved out when I was 6 years old. And even when we lived together, I was so young. He was more like an uncle than a brother. And so I came into parenting and I'm like, I don't know what's normal. My husband is he's got six siblings. He's got some whole siblings, some step siblings, some half siblings.
You guys came from very different experiences.
Very, very different experiences. But I remember coming to him like, is this normal? Do we need family therapy? And he's like, no, it's fine. This is what kids do. It's fine. Like, they're fighting all the time. He's like, I know. This is a family story. He taunted his next youngest sister, who was just a year younger than him, to the point that she put her fist through a plate glass window trying to punch him. He was holding this door shut and she was trying to get in, and she put her fist through. And then they're very healthy adults who have a good relationship today. But it's hard as a parent to know.
It's hard to know, like, at what point does it cross the line and become really problematic? Because kids do fight. They do argue. That's really normal and natural sibling behavior. And so trying to, you know, identify when it's crossing the line, when your child might be really endangering their sibling, like by dunking them under water in a swimming pool or threatening suicide, then I think that's when the ante goes up and it's time to really intervene, because, you know, that can start having lifelong effects on a child. But again, you know, most younger siblings, I'm guessing, have been held underwater by their older siblings. I'm guessing. Oh, yeah. I don't know, but I'm guessing. not necessarily in a manipulative way.
Right.
But I'm guessing, you know, I could be wrong, but I think that what changes that is the motivation behind it. So rather than just, you know, an older sibling goofing around and like dunking their younger sibling, this had a really clear message behind it of control and power and manipulation. And so I think that that's where things get really dicey and the potential for damage goes up.
Well, and also aside from the very significant issue of bullying, which is very real and I would guess probably happens in most families,
There's also just the confusion and the cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance, we've talked about before, is where you're trying to hold two opposing beliefs at the same time, and your brain is saying these don't work together. So most families have taught their kids, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina. There are two sexes, there's boys and girls. Mm-hmm. Well, then along comes transgender ideology and tells kids, no, it's a continuum and you can be anywhere on it. For younger kids, that is so confusing. And we've just talked about how insidious that is in school for kids to be taught that, but then to come home and have that happening in your home. And so many younger siblings, their relationship with their older sibling is really significant. Mm. If they, and it doesn't just have to be older siblings who's trans identified, but I'm thinking specifically about younger siblings who perhaps looked up to their older sibling, really appreciated them, respected them, identified, you know, I want to be just like my older brother or sister. And then suddenly to be told you don't have an older brother or sister anymore. That's not who that person is. When someone identifies as transgender, that is not, they're not the same person. They're not, they're trying to kill the person that they have been. And we hear that with the language, dead name. Mm. A dead name belongs to someone who's dead. And they are saying, oh, that name that my parents gave me, that name that my siblings have called me all my life, that person no longer exists. So that's one of those contradictions inherent in this, is the gender industry likes to say, oh, nothing has changed. They're just being who they've been all their lives, and nobody realized it. But yet they're using terms like dead name, which says, oh, I am killing off the person that I've always been. That's hard, not just for parents, but for siblings too.
It's almost like they're having to grieve the loss of their sibling because their siblings changed so much. And that dead name is such a good example. And I've heard parents say, you know, this is almost worse than death, because when a child dies, you grieve them to move on. But with this, you have like, you have to grieve the loss of your child, but then you have this other person who you don't even really recognize, because they're doing everything they can to disassociate from their former self. And gosh, for little kids, that's gotta be so confusing. You know, what happened to my sister? I love my sister. What happened to her? How did she become a boy? And is it gonna happen to me? Like, I think there are lots of really confusing thoughts that can come up for a child in that situation. And again, that's why this ideology is so damaging, because it undermines reality for children in a way that it's so scary. And so it is really important to have probably discussions with younger siblings that might be difficult, explaining, you know, this is a mental health issue. Your brother or sister is really struggling. We love them very much. We're going to have to see them through this. But to, you know, kids can be very compassionate if they understand that there's a problem, if they understand, you know, this is, and again, mental health, I think, is a really good way of explaining it, that this is something that your older brother is struggling with, your older sister is struggling with. We're hoping to see them through this. We love you. And this is how we're handling it. And it's not your fault, and there's nothing that you can do to fix it.
That's a great, I'm glad you said that, letting those kids know this is not your fault. Mm-hmm. Because I think, especially if you have sibling relationships that have been kind of fraught, the younger child might think, my sibling has done this because I've been so bad to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that children, kind of the whole world revolves around them from their perspective. Mm-hmm. That's just part of being a child. When parents divorce, very often the children take that upon themselves. They were fighting about me. It's my fault they divorced. Mm-hmm. And these children might apply that same faulty reasoning to if their sibling, you know, decides they want to change gender, you know, is this my fault? Is it because if they were same-sex siblings, is it because they hate being a boy and so they've decided to be a girl, but I'm a boy? Do they hate boys? Is it my fault they hate boys? There's just a lot of wrong messages, a lot of wrong thoughts. But I think something else you said too, validating that with the child. Yes, this is tough. We're going through this as a family. This is really tough. I loved what you said about validating. This is a mental health issue that your brother or sister is going through. We love him. We love you. We love all our children. But letting the child know that you see the same things the child sees. Yeah, this is confusing. You're right. This is not a good thing. You're right. We are on the same side. And our side is to try to help love your sibling back into reality and into loving him or herself. Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to mention, I was thinking about this when you talked about having interviewed parents who said that this in some ways feels worse than death. When a child is diagnosed with either a physical disability, physical illness, or a learning disability, when your child is diagnosed with something that's wrong, you really do go through a grieving process. One of my kids is on the autism spectrum and very, very mild. Most people would never recognize it. It's really not that big of an impact. But when we got those results back, I just cried. I just sat and cried. And that's so normal. As I've talked to other parents whose kids have special needs, when you first get that result back or get that diagnosis, you are grieving the person you thought that child was, or you're grieving knowing the struggles that child's going to go through. You're grieving this new understanding, which kills your old understanding. And you do move through a grief process, and then you go on to dealing with, all right, so what do we need to do to help make this child happy, healthy, whatever? You don't love your child any less, but you're grieving this understanding of what that child's life might be like.
Yeah, I think it's that sense of like all of a sudden recognizing that life is going to be harder for that child than you wanted it to be. And as a parent, we all want our children to, you know, be successful and to move through life easily. And when all of a sudden you realize, gosh, their life is going to be, is a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be. As a parent, that can just be kind of heartbreaking. And the other thing I think that's important to remember is that oftentimes these kids are really unstable and they can be volatile. I've talked to so many parents who are dealing with these kids who are just out of control, screaming and yelling and creating just havoc in the home, which is so hard for younger siblings. Anytime, you know, I think that, you know, depending on the child's personality, it can really, you know, some kids, it might just bounce off them. If you have a really tender kid, it might be so hard for them to be living in such a volatile environment. We actually have a video that talks about the different types of sibling relationships that I think is really interesting. I don't think it kind of covers all of them, but I think it gives some good insights into how different children might react and to the dynamics that they might develop. So we're going to show a little clip, and I encourage parents to go see the full clip.
Here are five types of unhealthy sibling relationships. 1. The golden child and the scapegoat. These types of siblings often grow up with a parent who is either a narcissist, sociopath, or a psychopath. The golden child is the parent's favorite because they mirror their values, beliefs, and habits. The parent thinks in black and white and considers this child the good one. Since the parent lacks empathy themselves, the golden child does too. 2. The royal brat and the wise owl. The royal brat is spoiled by the parents. They learn to get their way by being loud, manipulative, and stubborn. The parents usually give in to their tantrums and are more concerned with pleasing them and protecting them from difficult emotions. Consequently, the royal brat never learns how to work through their impulses, anger, nor sadness. Meanwhile, the wise owl is the complete opposite of the royal brat. The wise owl is mature, responsible, and level-headed. 3. The bully and the victim. This relationship is similar to that of a dominant parent and a submissive child, but happens in siblings instead. The bully in this scenario often has a challenging relationship with the parent and feels like they have no control over anything. So they learn to be a bully and take out their anger and frustrations on their sibling instead. 4. The addict and the enabler. This codependent type of relationship is propelled by an enabler who acts as a caretaker for an impaired sibling who usually struggles with addiction or mental illness. The enabler protects and takes responsibility for their sibling because they feel like their relationship or even their lives will fall apart if they don't. 5. The ghost and the hungry child. The ghost is someone who is emotionally distant from their whole family in general. They don't know how to cope with the chaos that happens every day behind closed doors, so they fade into the background. Meanwhile, the hungry child always longs to get a little closer to the ghost. They lack love and support from the family as a whole and yearn for someone to hold on to.
Well, that's such an interesting video. And as you said earlier, it certainly doesn't cover all of the different sibling dynamics that there can be. But I think it helps us to kind of recognize there's a lot of different things that can be going on between siblings. Yeah. And the parents can have a lot to do with some of those dynamics. And I think it behooves us to kind of look at ourselves and go, is what I'm doing as a parent helping or hurting?
Yeah.
Do I have a favorite child and am I communicating that? Do I have one that I'm constantly really hard on? And again, well, not
it
to
could be if you have a child who's really, you know, sometimes, you know, I talk to parents and these trans identified kids, they take up so much emotional energy that sometimes I think the parents are just, it's hard to keep that compassion and sympathy and just to have an open heart to them because they're just so demanding. And so I think, you know, there are techniques, I think, to sort of separate that. Do you have any suggestions for parents who are feeling that way, just feeling like so drained and having a hard time really feeling lovingly towards the child who is taking up so much energy?
Sometimes you just have to determine to love a child.
Yeah.
And you just have to say, I'm the parent and I'm going to do the best I can for this child. You've got to take care of yourself as well. And I know that can sound really glib, you know, self-care, take care of yourself, but you can't pour out of an empty vessel. So if you need some time away, try to get some time away. If you need to feed yourself with some, you know, if you love to read, take some time to read. If you love to go rock climbing, you know, give yourself those things so that you can come back to the family refreshed, rejuvenated, because it is draining. It is exhausting dealing with special needs kids. That's really what we're talking about here.
And I think some people believe that love is just something that, you know, parents are overflowing with. And like you said, sometimes love is a choice. Sometimes you actively have to say, I'm loving this child, even though they are really causing a lot of difficulty in the family. I'm going to consciously love this child. I'm going to make that choice to continue to love this child, to make sure this child knows that I love them unconditionally. And again, you know, I think we're taught as a society that love is just this emotion that parents, you know, are overflowing with. And sometimes parents have to make that conscious choice of, you know, this is a child who I'm struggling with. I'm going to love them anyway. Mm-hmm.
And just communicating that to the child. You can communicate to any child, I am really unhappy with your behavior. I really do not like what you're doing right now. I don't appreciate the words that you're using, mm-hmm. but I love you always. Mm-hmm. I will always be here for you. Mm-hmm. I am always going to try to make decisions that are the best for you. You may not always like those decisions, but I am committed to trying to do the best by you no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. It's appropriate to give those, you know, you can be unhappy with the behavior, but you still love the child. Yeah. And I think we all want that. We all want that kind of love. Mm-hmm. But one thing I really want to stress when you're dealing with children, whether it's a trans-identified child, whether it's a sibling, no matter what the issue is, do your best to keep your emotions in check. I'm thinking, especially if you're dealing with a sibling of a transgender identified child who's really struggling really confused, really upset, do your best to be calm, loving, firm, but not to let yourself communicate that sense of, I don't know what to do, this is terrible, this is awful, because your child is going to feel like it is his or her responsibility to take care of your emotions. And so that child's going to shut down, is not going to share, is not going to be open with you, because suddenly the child is put in the parent role of, I need to protect mom's emotions, I need to protect dad's emotions. We need to be the adults. We need to be the ones who are caring for our children's emotions, not the other way around.
I'm so glad you said that, because I do think that, you know, I've seen dynamics where, you know, children are put in a parental role because their parents are not handling emotions well. And that is really tough for a kid. It's not what they're supposed to be the kids. You're supposed to be the adult. And, you know, if you're feeling unable to handle things, reach out for support, get some help, find family, friends, or relatives who are able to, you know, support you in this, so that you are able to be the parent. Because, you know, it's okay, I think, to show emotion to the kids, but not to fall apart, and not for those kids to have to come over and comfort you and tell you it's going to be okay. We're supposed to be doing that for our children.
We can commiserate with our child.
Yeah.
You know, we can cry tears. I'm so sad over what's going on with John, but we still need to communicate to the child, I'm still in control. I'm still the one managing this house. Your dad and I are the ones who are making the decisions here, and you can trust us with your needs.
Right, yeah.
Well, we have a couple of questions. This first one came out of a parenting group very recently, and I asked, I'm like, oh, can we use this question on Common Sense Care? So this is just a verbatim question out of a parenting group. My 13-year-old son is just done with his trans-identified little sister who's 10. He wants his dad and me to make this go away. He tells us we should give his sister up for adoption. I don't know how to help him or to fix this. We would love to make it go away, but it's just not going away.
Oh, goodness. Oh, my gosh. I guess
make
I can
it go away.
Make, yeah, it, make go it go away. Away. And I can understand how exhausting this must be. I mean, it just must be so difficult to have to live with this. And I actually knew a family in a similar circumstance where the older child was just annoyed and done with it. She was just like done with her sister because her sister was, you know, taking on this trans identity. And she's like, you know, I lived with you my whole life. You're a girl, you were born a girl, we grew up as sisters, you're my sister, you're not my brother, and she wouldn't have anything to do with it. I never heard her suggest she wanted, you know, to put her younger sibling up for adoption, but I do understand those feelings. And I think the best approach is empathy, is just to say, I really want it to go away too. I understand this is really hard. Sorry you are going through this. And really to let him know that those feelings are okay. And I think sometimes kids will have these feelings and then they'll feel really guilty about it. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just thought that. I want my sibling to go up for adoption. Oh, that's terrible. And so they can have this sort of internal conflict. And I think it's okay to tell kids, you know, I understand why you feel that way.
Yeah. I talked to this mom a little further, just trying to figure out what was going on with her son. And the son was reaching an age that he's starting to, you know, be really aware of his social status and what people think. And they're at the same school, the two children. So I think he was embarrassed. But the mom also said he really loved his little sister. She used to do ballet and he was so proud of her. He loved to watch her perform. He would brag about how great his little sister was at ballet. And he feels like she's just thrown away who she was, that this person that he really valued and liked and has thrown that away. And I'm like, yeah, I like what you said. Validate that. Yeah, it's really painful for us too.
Yeah, it's not surprising he feels that way if he had those kind of, you know, very proud and, you know, big brotherly feelings about his little sister. To see her do this must be heartbreaking. And I think, you know, those are very real feelings. And the fact that they had a really good relationship before this happened, gives me hope that they'll be able to repair it and maybe try to help him find some words to tell his sister how sad he is. Mm-hmm. The other thing it might be appropriate is to walk him through the stages of grief, mm-hmm. so that he understands, like, we have lost an important part of our family here, and it's appropriate to grieve, and these are the feelings you're likely to have. So at least he understands the process.
Oh, that's really wise. I think maybe we can put in the resources below the video something about the stages of grief.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross has done some really good research about it, and so we can link to some of her books. And again, most of the time they're dealing with death, but in a way this is, it's not a death, but it's like they're trying to be dead. That's really what this is. And so the feelings of loss are very real.
And I want to make the point too, that even when the child comes back, if the child abandons the transgender identity and we say they're desists or detransitions and comes back, they don't necessarily return mm-hmm. exactly the way they left, yeah. especially if this has gone on for 2 or 3 or 4 years. This daughter is 10. If this takes 2 years, she's going to be 12 when she desists. A 12-year-old is quite different from a 10-year-old. So the loss is real. The loss is real. And I've talked to so many parents who have said, I'm so angry at what's been stolen from me. Mm. And yeah, you have a right to be angry. Years of your child's life have been stolen from you by this ideology. Mm. And it makes me really angry that the gender industry and the trans rights activists don't respect that.
Yeah.
Even if this were true, that a person can transition to be the opposite sex, even if this were entirely true, there is still grief and loss for those families. Definitely. And that deserves to be recognized.
And I think it's even exacerbated because I've heard of scenarios where the trans identified child is living with one parent and the other sibling is living with another parent. And that just complicates it even more, because then you have this, not only are you losing your sibling, but there's this sense of, not being in alignment with one of the parents, and mm-hmm. and it can be really confusing and complicated. So if you think it's hard for you as a parent, imagine, being younger and not having the life experience and having this taken up a good portion of your life. This is really heavy stuff for kids.
Yes, it is. We've got one more question. I'm concerned that the social contagion aspect of this is going to play out in my house. Should I be concerned that my trans-identified daughter might influence her younger siblings to become trans as well?
I think that's a very real concern. Do you have any suggestions on how to address that, Maria?
Well, I think it is a real concern because we see it happening. I mean, traditionally, a trans-identified the population has only been 0.7% of the population. And I think in other videos, we go into more details about that. But that's been a pretty well understood and accepted percentage throughout recorded history, about 0.7%. The odds of having two transgender identified people in the same family are really, really, really small. But we're seeing that. We're seeing more and more parents saying, oh, 2 of my 5 kids are transgender. Wonder what's going on there.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a social contagion aspect of this. It so much depends on the age of the siblings, the relationships between the siblings, the birth order. Is this an oldest sibling who's doing it? Is this a youngest sibling? What are the, is there bullying going on? There's so many dynamics involved. I would say the first thing to do is just sit down and start examining those.
Yeah.
What's the birth order like? What are the relationships like? When I was in college, I took a marriage and family relationship class, and they had us do this exercise that was so fascinating. We took a piece of paper and we wrote our family tree on it. And we did all of this, so like my mom and my dad, and they had me and my brother, and all of those relationships. For each person, I think we put, their birth date, their job, their level of education, and like one other thing. And then we had to draw lines between them, and like red lines were bad relationships and green lines were good relationships. And it was fascinating because I started seeing trends like, that's probably why these two people don't get along. And that feeds into this relationship. You might do that with your family because it might uncover some things that you didn't recognize before that will inform, how do I deal with this? How do I protect my kids? How do I change the way I parent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the other thing is just to have really honest discussions with children and talk about, you know, what is gender? What does that mean? You can be gender nonconforming. So, you know, it's okay if you're a girl and you want to have short hair. It's okay if you're a boy and you want to bake and, you know, do floral arrangements and really, you know, address that so that children are clear about that. And to also make it clear with the siblings, again, this is a mental health issue that your sibling's dealing with. We're concerned that, you know, because you're around it all the time, you're going to be influenced by it. How are you feeling? Yeah. You know, just stay in touch with your other kids. I think if you have an older sibling who, has a lot of kind of clout with the younger siblings, that's going to be a more problematic issue than if it's a younger sibling who has, you know, less influence. So again, those dynamics are going to be important. And again, try to pull in other people to come and support you in this. You know, let your children spend time with loving and caring friends and relatives who are going to really encourage them to embrace who they are. Because I think a lot of times, you know, the child who gravitates towards a transgender identity is vulnerable, you know, has some underlying issues already. And so try and, you know, see if your other kids have any of those vulnerabilities, and if they do, address those.
I've heard of families sending a transgender identified child to relatives for a while. And that's not in a punitive way, like, oh, we just can't deal with you, we're getting rid of you. But it can be very helpful to withdraw the child from the surroundings that are feeding this. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talk about is not feeding these wrong ideas, mm-hmm. but feeding the child with healthy ideas. So if the child has a good relationship with grandparents or with a particular aunt and uncle, it might not be a bad idea, you know. They're going to go live with grandma and grandpa for 6 months or do a school year, you know, with at aunt and uncle's house. It's a possibility, you know, it's something to consider, especially if you are feeling like, you know what, I need to really protect these other siblings. It might be good to consider giving your trans identified child another place to be for a while.
And that also might have the benefit of sort of separating them from the influences that are pulling them into this ideology, which could be really helpful. And giving them someone besides mom and dad to talk to. Because again, a lot of times these kids have some underlying issues that they need to process. And if they're given the opportunity to do that, it's more likely that they'll resolve this identity.
Yeah. Well, this has been, I don't want to say a difficult topic. We all subject, but I just think family relationships are fascinating, and I think it's something we don't think about that often is sibling relationships, and especially in this particular area. So I'm glad we got a chance to talk about it. I feel like with everything, much more we could have said. Mm-hmm. Neither you or I are experts about family relationships, but I hope we've at least given this some good thought and given parents some things to think about.
And I think just having an awareness of, you know, the fact is that things could be going on that you might not be seeing, and just to really pay attention to that so you can give your other children support and make time for them. Because, you know, I've been in situations where, you know, one of my children, you know, there's something going on, there's a crisis, and it is easy to sort of forget about all the other siblings and just focus on that one child. And your other siblings need, your other children need your love and support during these difficult times. So what are we talking about next week, Maria?
Next week, we are going to talk about rapid onset gender dysphoria, mm-hmm. known as ROGD, and social contagion. So we touched on social contagion right there in that last question. We're going to go into it a little bit more in detail next week.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, Maria.
Thanks, Erin. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth